Please check in on the computer. We're going to try the computer tonight. We have 27 board members present. That is a quorum.
For first agenda item, Chairman Doyle.
Thank you. I have an appointment this evening, and that is for the balance of the term for the District 34 supervisory position, the county board position previously held by Tom Rauch. As I mentioned at our last meeting, this was the best slate of candidates we have ever had apply for a county board position. It was an extremely difficult choice, and I'm very pleased that we came up with a person that I think is just going to do a great job on the county board. She was so enthusiastic during her interview, I thought she was going to jump out of the chair on a couple of occasions. And if she brings that kind of enthusiasm to the county board, I think that we're going to have one really good county board member. And so it is with great pleasure that I nominate Tina Weers to be the new county board member from District 34.
Chairman Doyle has nominated the one good county board supervisor for the 34th district.
No, the one good county board supervisor from the entire county board, right.
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah. Thank you. Seconded by Supervisor Cotter. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously. Welcome.
I, Tina Weers.
Having been appointed to the office of County Board Supervisor, District 34.
Having been appointed to the office of County Board Supervisor, District 34.
Affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Affirm that I will uphold the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And faithfully and impartially discharge the duties.
And faithfully and impartially discharge the duties.
Of said office to the best of my abilities.
Of said office to the best of my abilities.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Tina, it's customary that we have a 20-minute speech by our new person, so you can start that right now.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you, everyone. Really, I'm excited to be here.
Okay, congratulations.
All right. Congratulations again, Tina, and thank you, Judge. All right. We have an update on our favorite patient. Jerry Sobranek will bring us up to date.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you know, Arlene Benyon has been very, very sick here recently and requiring open heart surgery. Being as sick as she has been, it's an inspiration to me, and I think every county board member, that she never missed a committee meeting. She never missed any meetings. She co-sponsored or co-chaired along with Mary Nagley the event last week, WCA, and I think that all the work she does behind the scenes, some of the older members here are familiar with all the things she's done. I never asked for any credit or anything, but I think she should be an inspiration to all of us for what she does for La Crosse County. However, this morning at 6 o'clock, we went into the hospital, and after they got her prepped and everything, she's in very good spirits. She needed a valve, a pig valve, so she was joking and making, noise like pigs make. So she was in very good spirits. She got the valve. She needed, they thought was the bypass, where they would take a valve out of her, vein out of her chest and do the bypass, but because she followed the doctor's directions and orders, lost 30 pounds, changed her diet completely, and that the bypass was not necessary. The doctor said that the valve fit very, very nicely. It was just a couple of centimeters larger than it could have been for her person her size, but he was very, very pleased on how everything went. When she'll be in intensive care tonight and tomorrow, she'll probably be moved up after dinner up the room, up the floor, sixth floor. And then a day or two, she'll probably be discharged. She'll probably have her up and walking. When she gets discharged, she's going to check into a nursing home because she lives alone. She'll get her care there. The nurses, they can change her bandages. They can bathe her. They can give her medicine and her meals and everything. So she's going to be just fine. The operation started at 9:45, and we're all shocked when it was over by 11 o'clock because all she needed was the valve. And heart's beating great, very healthy, and everything is very normal, and she's doing just fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair. She's at Gunderson.
All right. Thank you, Jerry, for that report. There is a card going around. Ask people to sign that and pass it along, and I know we're all glad to hear the good news about Arlene, so give her our best and keep us posted as when she can have calls or visitors. Okay. Next, Chair's report. One thing very briefly, in your packet, some information from UW Extension. They have their event called Extension on the Move, and it says come meet and talk with Extension staff, bring your questions, and enjoy some refreshments. They certainly wanted to make sure all local elected officials receive notice of this, and it's going to be Monday, next Monday, the 28th at the Onalaska Public Library, 741 Oak Avenue South in Onalaska, from 4 to 8 p.m. So if you have a chance, stop by there, and if you haven't met all the people, that'll be a good chance to meet them. So next Monday, 4 to 8 p.m. at the Onalaska Public Library. That's all I had. Next, we have some proclamations.
A proclamation, coincidentally, September 2009, Libraries and UW Extension Month, whereas educational programs for agricultural professionals, businesses, local governments, communities, families, and youth are brought to the residents of La Crosse County, and whereas educational library programs identify and respond to specific community needs for education, research, and knowledge to improve the quality of life in local communities, to strengthen families, to increase the competitiveness of businesses in agriculture, enhance decision-making in local government, and to develop leadership skills for managing resources and planning for the future. And whereas libraries provide recreational educational resources in the pursuit of lifelong learning, and whereas UW Extension programming combines faculty, campus-based specialists, and staff expertise in the areas of agriculture, horticulture, community natural resources and economic development, family living education, and 4-H and youth development, whereas UW Extension faculty and staff and area library staff are committed to educating the residents of La Crosse County in order to promote lifelong learning and provide a more knowledgeable and informed community, now therefore be it resolved by La Crosse County Board, does hereby proclaim the month of September as La Crosse County Libraries and UW Extension Month, and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to educating the residents of La Crosse County.
That was good. You could sell stuff on cable TV. Moved by Leon, seconded by Dennis. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. But I still like the way Marilyn reads better. She puts more fervor into it, and that's really important.
Can we have Marilyn do the jurors?
She could do it, yeah.
I guess not. Wisconsin Court System Juror Appreciation Month. Whereas the right to have a trial by a fair and representative jury is an essential safeguard protected by both the United States and Wisconsin constitutions, and whereas a juror in the La Crosse County Circuit Court is, along with voting, one of the most important responsibilities of citizenship, and whereas the Wisconsin State Court System, partnering with the State Bar of Wisconsin, has established September as Juror Appreciation Month, a time to publicly recognize the contribution of those who are summoned and serve. Therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby supports the goals of Juror Appreciation Month. Educate the public about jury duty and the importance of jury service, applaud the efforts of jurors who fulfill their civic duty, and ensure that all jurors are treated with respect and that their service is not unduly burdensome. Be it further resolved, La Crosse County Board of Supervisors extends its sincere thanks and appreciation to all employers who pay employees their normal wages while allowing them to serve as jurors, preventing financial hardship and fostering community strength. Be it finally resolved that La Crosse County Board of Supervisors honors the service and commitment of citizens who perform jury duty, who by participating in the judicial process aid those elected to serve the citizens of La Crosse County by preserving the rule of law, the basis for a free society.
Moved by Margaret Wood, seconded by Vicki Burke. Discussion. John Menninger.
I just want to say I got a letter in the mail from the Kirk of Courts on Saturday notifying me that I'm going to have jury duty on October 12th. So I'm ready to go. Okay. Thanks for the resolution then.
All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. You're not allowed to abstain, John, not on that one. All right. Now into the real exciting stuff, the overview of the strategic plan for Lakeview Health Center.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, as hopefully you're pulling this out of your pack and that you've read through it, I'm going to ask Pam Sem, if it's all right, Mr. Chair, to walk us through just at least the first two sets of goals for what we've accomplished so far in 2009 and going into 2010. Just to set the stage, and the members of the Aging Long-Term Care Committee have a little bit better detailed understanding of this because we've reviewed this at their committee, Lakeview Healthcare Center continues to be one of our most challenged departments as far as the inadequacy of public finances in the area of healthcare. One of the things that you don't hear a lot of debate about in this most recent debate is that Medicaid is inadequate to pay for the true cost of care, and as a provider of care, well over 90% of our clients at Lakeview, whether they be from other counties or from our own, the Medicaid dollars that are provided are inadequate to pay for the full cost of care. And we continue to be challenged to be able to provide that service to meet the needs of our community and our region. And even with the multi-county collaboration, we continue to be challenged on how we're going to be able to put this together. And I'll talk more about it during budget. But I would like, again, with the chair's permission, to have Pam Sem address us and walk through just the first couple pages. We're not going to go through the entire document. Hopefully you've had a chance to read it, those of you that are most interested. But I want to highlight for the benefit of the board some of the issues that we're starting to wrestle with and some of the steps that Pam and her staff and finance and human services are working on to try to address these issues with Lakeview.
All right. Pam?
Hello? Okay. Before I start, I just want to tell you when I got the agenda, I was kind of surprised. Your newest county board supervisor went to high school with my daughter. So that really makes me feel old tonight, Tina. Thanks. As Steve said, with all the challenges that we have, not only at Lakeview Health Center, Nursing Home, and FDD, but also in our other entities that we've established over the years, we felt it was time that we needed to do a strategic plan that was flexible over the next 3 years that allowed us to continue to grow and find some way to pay some of the bills and lessen our tax levy. So Steve asked me tonight to just briefly explain why we're doing this plan, and then we'll run through our interim 2009 goals, where we're at with those, and just briefly cover the 2010 first year goals. So if you have any questions along the way, feel free to ask. As you know, most of you anyway, Lakeview specializes in services for a very special population. We serve people with chronic mental illness, developmental disabilities, and elderly with dementia with behavioral disturbance. In the past several years, we have extended our services significantly. This expansion in an aging building, I'm not used to a mic, can you tell? And the rapidly changing external environment in which we operate prompted our need to develop this plan for the future. To develop this plan, we did retain an independent consultant by the name of John Keefe, who has a specialty in working with county nursing homes on strategic plans and other issues. And he has identified a long-range, flexible three-year plan to help us through this process. I want to thank those of you last month who decided that you might actually want to read this plan before you passed our resolution. So I would like to call your attention to page 6 of the final strategic plan. Like Steve said, as we were going through this process, Steve was very involved. He talked with John Keefe. He met with us. And it was finally determined after a period of time when we were working on this plan, drafting it, that we actually needed to have an interim plan for this year in order to accomplish our goals in the future. So with Steve and John and Wanda, my associate administrator, myself, and my department head group, we came up with this interim plan of steps that we needed to succeed this year before we could embark on 2010 and beyond. As you look on page 6, we want to just run through briefly the interim objectives and then our operational activities that we have accomplished, many of them already. Interim 1A is by October 1st, we'll negotiate an agreement with Western Wisconsin CARES on the moratorium of admissions of La Crosse County residents. This ties in with Interim B, which is negotiating an agreement for Western Wisconsin CARES for satisfactory reimbursement for La Crosse County citizens who are members of the MCO. Unfortunately, we're kind of at a standstill right now on this. We've continued to work with the state. We've continued to work with Western Wisconsin Cares. And at this point in time, we are currently admitting residents, ironically, from every county but La Crosse, who are MCO members. We're not sure where we're going to end up with this, but I do know that Steve and Bill have been heavily involved, and Jay Huber and myself have been to Madison to talk to the state folks, and at this point in time, we're kind of at an impasse on resolving those issues. Interim C was to review and, if necessary, negotiate any contracts between Lakeview Health Center and other MCOs that operate in our facility. Bill, again, has been very heavily involved in any contract approval at this point in time. At least the contracts that we reviewed with the other MCOs that we deal with, we've really had no significant issues, and we are continuing to get referrals from them. To obtain these goals and objectives, we had to have some what we call priority operational activities, which are listed also on page 6. We ongoingly identify where our residents are from in each of our entities. This changes day to day and month to month because of our referral sources. So we have not actually done a referral source map because I think we'd be spending most of our workday updating that, but we do keep a running total, and I do have them with me tonight if anybody's interested on how many residents we have in each of our entities from each county. Our POA number 2, we have ongoingly during our budget process with finance and Steve and corp counseling and human services been reviewing our profit loss statements, where we are at with our current tax levy, where we propose to be, that Steve will be talking about later with our next tax levy and other and what our outcome will be for 2009. So that is pretty much done now that you have your administrator's budget. We also do have one thing that we had to postpone, and that is our POA number 4. We were going to develop some recommendations for accommodating our residents during a priority run remodel. That has been put on hold for 2009, and we probably will start looking at that with a possible discussion in 2010 with the remodel. If you go to page 7, of the interim plan. Like Steve said, I'm just going to briefly run through the goals that were established for our three-year plan and just talk a little bit about each one of them. Several of them are interrelated, and you'll see that if you read this study. I know strategic plans are a good bedtime material to put you to sleep, but they are strategic in helping us plan for the future. Our goal for year one, goal one, is to continue to generate revenues from Mississippi Valley Health Services. We may note a rate change. There was some discussion in our last Mississippi Valley annual meeting that perhaps now is the time to do a rate increase on that daily rate that the members are all paying. We do have another meeting scheduled in October of this year, which we will be discussing many of the budgetary issues with the members of Mississippi Valley. Steve will be there, Bill will be there, and Jerry Huber will be there from Human Services. Our goal number 2 is to initiate and complete our high priority physical plant and campus grounds projects. Most of the things that we need done in our facility are not necessarily aesthetic. They have to do with things that are way too complicated for me to understand as a nurse background administrator, but they have to do with our heating and air conditioning, ventilation, lighting, plumbing, electrical, and you name it, from nuts and bolts. The majority of it is not aesthetic, but more functional. So this will have to tie in with all of our other goals that we'll be working on in 2010. Our two goals, goal number 3 and goal number 4, actually kind of run together. They are tied together in some of the aspects. One of the things we need to look at is to look at reorganization of our management. We are still in an institutional mode because for 100 and some years at Lakeview we ran an institution. In the last several years, we have really expanded into the community. We have adult family homes. We have a community workshop. We have a community-based residential facility. And we also are the very first in the state to have a state-only behavioral locked unit, which is a separate nursing home license, which does not take Medicaid. So we need to start looking internally at how we do our processes, how we manage, and how we operate, and that's going to be a complete reality shock for the staff at Lakeview, and it's something that is one of our high priorities for the management team. We also are going to complete some feasibility studies to develop options to fill any identified gaps in our services. Even though we feel we're doing a lot for our members and our counties that use us, I'm sure there's always something that we could be doing better, that a gap that we could fill. I've already heard rumors that they want more of the state-only type services, maybe for elderly with dementia, and some of the other options that we have. We do have a meeting set up with our primary Mississippi Valley members on October 7th. That again, we will have reps from La Crosse County there, as well as the significant member counties of Mississippi Valley who have the majority of the residents at Lakeview. The purpose of that meeting is to work with the human services directors and their supervisors to ascertain what they feel our gaps in service are, what they would like to see us provide in 2010 and beyond, and then we will go from there and work on those issues. So does anybody have any questions? I don't want to take up a ton of your time by going through the entire plan, as Steve said, but we did want to give you a little background on where we're at, why we're doing it, and what our first year goals will be.
Questions for Pam. Mr. Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I read through this, and I did not fall asleep while I was reading through it either, it looks like you're, for the next 3 years, going after help for funding from other counties, and you're looking, shooting for around $850,000. Where do we stand? If we can generate that kind of money, I understand we lost a lot bigger bucks than that over the last number of years. I think it was almost $1.5 million or something, and I'm not sure. I don't have those figures right in front of me here, but are we still going to be in hock for a negative dollar figure? And if we're going to put all this money into renovating the old building out there, how are we ever going to see daylight at the end of the tunnel?
Supervisor, if I can interject there.
Go ahead.
It's clear that, and I'll describe some of that in this evening's budget presentation, but the revenue stream from MVHS doesn't provide all of our answers for us. In addition to that, we've never described this as getting the other counties to pay our share that we have to pay for our clients. It's trying to get them to pay for the care for their residents. And that's one of the reasons we're going to have to revisit the dollar amount, is that $850,000 is actually an annual amount that we've received in 2008. It's a full year, but that's not going to be sufficient to end up dealing with the full cost of care at Lakeview. We're not going into a large capital plan at this point. We're doing the bare minimum to get by in 2010, because we've got to answer that basic question. Can we generate enough additional revenue from working with the other counties and get them to make a long-term commitment along with the capital expenses of that building? So during the year of 2010, along with our other partner counties, we're going to be asking some very, very tough questions about the sustainability of the Lakeview operation, the revenue stream, and what kind of investment we're able to make collectively, because we won't be able to bring you a recommendation on capital improvements beyond this budget without some serious discussion about how essential we are to the other counties, how willing they are to partner long-term, not just a short-term agreement, and to go from there. But, Supervisor, that's just the crux of exactly where we're at with Lakeview.
And I guess I do have another question, too. I sit on the Long-Term Care Committee, and Clinical Services is reorganizing, and we are going to be hiring a consultant there, too, as I understand. We are finding that some of the people that are being picked up for whatever the reason do have mental problems and a lot of other problems, and you know, some of the people on human services could talk more about this than I, but is there some way we could use the facility for some of the people that have problems, and we pick them up, or either the sheriff's department or the city police pick up?
Okay.
Can we divert them through your system at West Salem, and is that a possibility or not?
That is one of the things that is being discussed in the CARE project from Human Services and other vendors in La Crosse County and the hospitals and law enforcement, is they initially want to get the system set up in La Crosse as the central location, but right from the get-go, there had been discussion with Jerry's shop and my shop about being a satellite service for more of the out-of-county folks, or the outer county folks, I guess, you know, the folks that live in West Salem, the folks that live in Bangor, the folks, you know, where the police are coming into La Crosse now, and they could use Lakeview as a crisis center as well. So that is in the talking point once they get the care center established.
Other questions? Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of just quick ones, I think, Pam. Ballpark, what percentage of your staff is not in Lakeview proper, that facility?
So you're saying in my other entities that work only in my other entities? Because we do have a small percentage of crossover.
Yep.
But I would say probably about 30%.
Really, that much? Okay. And then, so what's your total employment right now?
My what?
Total employment.
297.
Okay.
And not all part, you know, some are very part-time.
Yeah. And then when you said the other, take La Crosse County out, who are the next three or four or five counties that have the largest number of folks at Lakeview or Lakeview's facilities?
Okay. Monroe, Vernon, Juneau, and probably Sauk. And then, of course, Western Wisconsin Cares has a fair number there as well.
So that I'm glad you said that, because that leads me to my last question. And I apologize if I sound paranoid about this. As a board member of Western Wisconsin Cares, I just want to make sure everybody's clear that it's not Western Wisconsin Cares' choice to be having this problem with placing members at Lakeview, that this is inflicted upon us collectively by the state of Wisconsin.
That's correct.
So I just, if you could just say what it is that's causing this challenge right now.
When they approved the MCOs, and not just Western Wisconsin Cares, but up until this point, the MCOs had not been contributing, although some of the smaller MCOs were getting individual waivers for that daily rate, and they were paying. Western Wisconsin Cares, because of their numbers in the facility, didn't want to go ahead and get individual waivers. So the state of Wisconsin finally sat down and looked at it, because there's more commissions coming down the line. We're the first, but there's several other county homes that are looking at this same model. And basically what they said is that they will pay for the daily rate for certain circumstances for MCO members. Some of them have to do with that they need a certain level of care. Some of them have to do with a behavioral issue. They have to have a certain behavioral score. Obviously, that's not a problem at Lakeview. But the caveat is that because they don't want the MCOs to be responsible for La Crosse County residents, that any resident of the county in which the nursing home is would not be covered. So this isn't only going to impact La Crosse County. It's going to impact Dodge, who is also in the process of establishing a commission. Clark County is looking at establishing a commission. So basically, in that case, any one of those, their in-county residents will not be paid the extra rate.
So and am I right that it's really the state saying to the MCOs, we aren't going to reimburse you at the right rate for your members who come from the county in which the facility is located?
That's correct.
So it's a so the state is forcing the MCOs to make a choice about those members and where they place those members. It's not between Western Wisconsin Cares and Lakeview or Mississippi Valley Health System or eventually Clark or Dodge County or somebody else. It's the state restricting those MCOs on what they are going to get reimbursed.
No, actually, it's a little bit more complicated.
Thank you.
the state is not reimbursing, but we still are serving those clients.
Right, but
so,
I'm saying
so we
that
are stuck with the cost, and then we're
right. And I get that. I'm just saying that Western Wisconsin Cares doesn't have a choice in this matter because the contract that we have with the state doesn't allow us to pay that difference.
Actually, that's a difference of opinion between us and Western Wisconsin Cares.
Is, well, what does the Attorney General say about that?
The Attorney General has not opined on this yet.
Oh.
And that's part of the issue on a whole slide. I'll get into the future challenges. But The issue is that they receive a capitated rate,
right.
And if they need to pay more than what they feel they can, they've got to find the least restrictive care and pay for that cost of that service, just as they pay more than a traditional rate when they do a community-based adult family home, for example.
Right, but the state is treating the members of MCOs from those home counties, I'm just going to use that term.
Which is only La Crosse right now.
Right. Differently than
right.
members from other counties.
Right.
And it gets even more complicated than that, because once someone comes from another county and is here, maybe from Monroe or somewhere else, we can end up being stuck with them as residents here and still end up then incurring the cost. So it's far more complicated than we're going to describe in just a couple of minutes. But yes, the state is the one that has been the moving party to not grant the waiver. We have some difference of opinion on how much flexibility is there, but we also have the difficulty that when someone is a resident from another county and ends up here, we can end up inheriting, under the current scheme, if we will, or the current situation, the responsibility for that client. And that is not adequately recognized, we believe, by either the state or Western Wisconsin Cares. And Bill could go into a lot of the detailed legal issues that are involved. That's more the...
Monica and Tina, there will be a question test on this after the meeting tonight. Jeff Schrader.
Refresh my memory. How many counties are members of the MCO?
MCO or Mississippi Valley. They're two distinct entities.
Well, we were just talking about the MCO, right? Or
eight, right? Eight in the MCO? Mississippi Valley has 11 county members, and the MCO has eight county members. Some of them intersect. Some of them don't.
So we're responsible for Mississippi Valley and the MCO members?
No.
Okay.
Each county that's a member of Mississippi Valley is responsible for their own residents. In the MCO, the state will allow the MCO to pay the rate difference for any resident in that MCO membership who is not from La Crosse County. That's where the stipulation lies at this point. And the issue is for the payment for La Crosse County people who are enrolled in the MCO, not County of La Crosse responsibility.
Okay, and then Mr. O'Malley referred to La Crosse County perhaps having to have some of these people from outside of our county that are members of the MCO become residents of our county? Is that what you said?
There is always that potential. We have had one or two who are longtime residents of La Crosse, or of other counties, where they have gotten the family to petition the court to change their residence to La Crosse County. And we see that there could be a tumble-down effect.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wasn't there about $750,000 in escrow or something from when this thing was going on? Has that been released and we have that now?
That's right, and we'll be touching on that in the budget. That's actually going to help us with the 2010 Lakeview budget. It's actually $850,000.
Okay, I didn't remember it. The other thing, for interest, I went out and looked at the HVAC at Lakeview, and one of the interesting parts is we're worried about the ecology and stuff. Last, it'd be May, June, and July, they used 9,297,000 gallons of water for air conditioning, and apparently that's all dumped into Lake Neshonnock. I understand we have a similar system in this building where we're using water and dumping it. Is that correct? So, I mean, if we're really concerned, we might want to look at some of this. I think water is going to be the new gold, and 900 million is a pretty good start on something, and we're worried about all this going into the Mississippi and stuff. I think we better, if we want to set this big example, we better start taking a little look at what we're doing and not worry quite so much about parking lots. Thank you.
Other questions? Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. Just so I understand what I think I heard, that it basically any La Crosse residents, we have a two-tier rate charge, one for the regular residents from the county of La Crosse and one for the MCO patients from out counties. And is it the state's contention that because the taxpayers in La Crosse County have subsidized the people in Lakeview all along, that they don't choose to give the same rate approval as they do for the people coming in from other counties?
Their reasoning when Jerry and I went down to talk to them was kind of thrown back into our faces, our reasoning for establishing Mississippi Valley, that each county is responsible for their own individuals. And so their, I guess their interpretation, at least that's what Jerry and I heard, was that even though they're MCO members, they are still residents of La Crosse County. So La Crosse County should be responsible for those individuals.
And we have a going rate for La Crosse County, for general residential rate. I mean, I know they're different based on the levels of care, but in general, the rates charged to people who are currently there that are not in the MCO would be lower than the rate that's being charged to the MCO. Is that correct?
I'm not sure, Audrey. Are you talking about their daily rate or the add-on rate that Mississippi Valley people pay? Are you talking about, like, their daily level of care rate?
Yeah, but that's what's the add-on rate? What's that about?
That's $39.35 per day per resident.
Based on?
Based on our losses in a formula that Mary Powell and Gary and our finance people, Sharon Davidson, it's a loss formula that is beyond my comprehension, even though, but they established that rate based on a formula of our losses.
And that's only charged to the MCO people?
No, that's charged to every
everybody.
County and MCO that are out of county.
Okay, but not La Crosse County residents?
Right.
Okay.
That's where the state steps in partially.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Because this is such a complicated issue, I'm going to ask that Steve and the staff at the next county board meeting put together like a 5-minute crash course in MCO and MVHS and the state and Medicare, Medicaid, all that stuff, because we keep hearing these things tossed around, and I think a lot of people just we haven't heard enough of it to really have it straight in our own minds. So right. If you can do that at the next meeting, that would be helpful.
Certainly, and also in the budget presentation, I'll be reviewing a couple of these things with the help of the PowerPoint slide. You'll actually see some of the details. So, again, Aging Long-Term Care Committee members may have a little better grasp of it. It is complicated, but it is critical to a lot of the budget issues. So I will be touching on this even a bit more as we go through the budget itself.
Sounds good. Roger Plesha.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. I guess in a nutshell, if everyone were to look at what the Medicaid rate is and what we're getting paid as far as what we need to have as our losses for Lakeview Healthcare Center, if there was a way that the state wouldn't siphon those Medicaid rates away and use them for other purposes, and if they paid the whole amount that it costs to put those individuals, to keep them at Lakeview, we wouldn't be in this situation. And I think that's the biggest portion of what's going on. The cost for care is much higher than what we're being reimbursed by the state. The federal government is reimbursing the state, but the state is finding other ways to use those Medicaid dollars. And I think that's our major problem right now. So we're sitting there with less than what we need to keep everything going. And I guess MVHS has helped us in the process of being able to at least not take the loss from the other counties that are members of MVHS or the other counties that are surrounding us that have people at Lakeview. And so I guess the idea is we thought this would be a help to us so La Crosse County taxpayers would not have to pay for all of those individuals who are not La Crosse County residents. So in a nutshell, that's it.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. Let's stick with you, Roger, and read that resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the adoption of the 2010 through 2012 strategic plan for Lakeview Health Center, whereas Lakeview Health Center's mission statement provides, in part, a commitment to excellence in providing care and rehabilitation with respects for the dignity and rights of individuals who have special physical, developmental, and mental health needs to residents of La Crosse County and Western Wisconsin, in cooperation with other health-related agencies, and whereas Lakeview Health Center has developed a 3-year strategic plan for Lakeview Health Center, including interim steps to be completed in 2009 in order to better position the organization for long-term viability, and whereas the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee has reviewed the 3-year 2010-2012 strategic plan and recommends its adoption by the La Crosse County Board. Now, therefore, it be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby adopt the 3-year 2010-2012 strategic plan for Lakeview Health Center. I move for its approval.
Moved by Roger Plesha, second by Monica Cruz. Any questions or discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. All right. That gets us up to the budget.
I apologize that I didn't have my PowerPoint slides completed to include in your agenda packet. Again, tonight we're not going to be making any decisions. What I'm going to try to do is to give you an overall viewpoint of the major issues within the 2010 proposed budget. Hopefully you've spent some time with the document that you have, but I'm going to just touch on a few highlights along with the last year, Tara gave me so much, such a hard time that I needed to do something to kind of lighten the mood with my slides. So I again, it's kind of a zen. It's the only slide that will be zen, I promise you. It's to make you feel peaceful before we get into the difficult parts of the budget. So
I thought it's to make us feel like we're drowning.
Yeah, that too. That's another way of looking at it. There's always different viewpoints that you can have. Where's the clicker here? Here we go. Oh. So what you're receiving is a black and white copy, but the screen is a little bit more exciting. We save ink by not printing in color. The documents that you've got, of course, are the budget document itself. Most of what I'm going to concentrate on is going to be the yellow page, which is primarily on the second part, which shows you a detailed summary. I'm going to highlight some of the numbers. Gross spending, tax rate, tax levy, those kinds of things, and that will be part of the summary. And then the pages that I'll go through will actually highlight some of the largest differences. In addition to that, you would have had inserted in your budget document as separate pages a detail that each year we give you on the uses of fund balance, a blue sheet, and then a quick summary, not of all the numbers, but the actual changes recommended in positions as well as outside agencies. And I'll come back to those. If you let me go through a couple of slides before we start with any questions that interrupt, but if you're not clear on something, please interrupt me, because I want to make sure that this is useful for you as we go through here. This, again, is the first meeting of the entire board. You will end up going through committees, reviewing a number of these items, and we will have whatever number of meetings that the full board needs to have on complicated issues like Mississippi Valley, like our relationship with Western Wisconsin Cares, if we need specific items on highway capital, for example, or other capital improvements, you'll end up seeing that we have a number of issues. I also want to just apologize that sometimes the complexity of this, it's not that it's too complex for anybody in the room to understand. It's that it takes that much time for us to put together recommendations, and if we haven't explained it clearly, we will take whatever time is necessary, because the only way we can deal with the kinds of budget challenges we have are quite often very creative or complex answers to a lot of these things. Mississippi Valley is one of those, where historically La Crosse County was able to support the operations of Lakeview without complex contractual partnerships with other counties. We have had to put together a structure that has that relationship with other counties, and we are the first in the state. So it ends up having a number of strings attached to that. So let me just start to go through, if this works. There we go. Oh, I didn't know it was going to do that. Okay. Included in your packet, again, is the detail of this, and I'm not going to go through every single point since it didn't come up all at once, but let me just read through briefly, because I want to make sure the good news, this is the only good news slide in here. Everything else are challenges. The good news is that the 2010 budget is balanced. The recommendation that I'm bringing to you preserves most services and meets client obligations, all current obligations, including our 2010 labor contracts. Remember that we have every contract settled for 2010 with the exception of one, which is the Hillview Nursing Home, which doesn't have any tax levy support. For those new board members, there are two nursing homes in our operation. One is Hillview, one is Lakeview. Hillview is able to operate on its own because primarily they get a large amount of private pay patients, about 35% of their clients, so they never need to ask us for tax levy support. Lakeview, on the other hand, has very difficult to serve clients, and only about 10% of them or less are private pay, means that Medicaid, the inadequate funding source that Roger talked about, is there to provide for that care other than our property tax levy. So we have all labor contracts settled for next year except for Hillview, and of course you'll have to act on non-union, but this budget assumes the same percentage of increase in wages and benefits for all employees that's listed there, 2% on January 1, 1% on July 1. We're able to meet that obligation within this budget, which is similar to counties of our size. We continue to maintain a very strong financial position and have preserved conservative use of fund balances that have helped us in key areas. That's one of the reasons we do that blue sheet, is you can actually see where those fund balances are used. 90% of the time we're using those for one-time only expenses, with the exception of human services. We're having to use some of their fund balance to be able to maintain services. But as I think John Mettinger talked about, one of the reasons for having a rainy day fund is when you need to rely on that, it's available. And that's one of the cases, is that in this current state of economy, we are having a rainy day with many of the services that we're using. One of the bright spots is that our health insurance premium only increased by 1% this year. That's because for one of the few years in quite some time, we've been able to actually not have losing month after losing month. We've got a good, healthy reserve there that can moderate some of the premium increases, and we're actually experiencing a good year. That's helped us deal with this budget. Obviously, we spent a lot of time talking about Mississippi Valley Health Services collaboration that will help save us some levy costs. Again, in 2008, we generated $850,000, so that's going to help us in 2010 and beyond. Our equalized value actually increased this year, which was a surprise. I've shown you some of that information before. We are expecting potentially a drop, but that's a positive position to be in, and probably one of the top 10 to 15 counties in the state that were able to see that experience, while other counties were either just barely holding their own or losing equalized value. And most of that increase was from new construction coming online, not through increased value on people's homes. The state budget cuts could have been much worse than were there. Jennifer Schilling on Joint Finance had a great deal to do with moderating, along with her partners on Joint Finance, the impact that could have happened to counties. And so that while we're still dealing with some of the budget cuts, the original proposal of the governor was much worse than what was originally established, what was finally established for us. Stimulus money has helped a little bit in a number of these budgets. It's helped at the state level in particular balance their budget, which is also going to be on the next slide as one of the future challenges. But there are a few small dollars in here that have helped out with our budget, not a great deal. Most everything is still on counties to provide the operation. And we had very few personnel requests from departments. Actually, what you'll see is a net decrease of 1.49. Departments are doing everything they can to stay within existing means and just meet the ongoing increased demand for services. Human services, for example, is one of the most challenged, of course. When you have a bad economy, you tend to have more people in distress, more people at risk, more people asking for economic support, and our staff is doing a yeoman's effort at trying to step up and maintain that, even with the most severe budget cuts we're actually in human services from the state. So as I said, that's the end of the good news. The challenges that we're confronted with, of course, are that the state, in its wisdom, decided to impose a 3% levy limit on property taxes, while our costs escalate much faster, and the state is not providing any new revenue to deal with the ongoing escalating costs of mandated services. I can use example after example, from court-appointed attorneys to economic support to mental health services. et cetera, et cetera. The state continues to not pay for what they require us to do, and yet at the same time believe that they can impose a levy cap and not expect us to end up with waiting lists and those types of things. We're also in an economy where investment interests of our reserves is significantly down. That continues to put a challenge on us because when interest revenue is high, you're able to control property taxes with that additional revenue because it ends up reducing the cost of providing services when you can use that outside revenue source. Another example of an outside revenue source, of course, is sales tax revenue. We budget $9.7 million a year from the 0.5% local option sales tax. We will struggle to hit that number this year. Luckily, we have a reserve called the Excess Sales Tax Reserve that allows us to not have to go back and cut some other portion of the budget because in the good years that we've had, we've utilized that to help protect ourselves for just this kind of eventuality. One of the challenges, of course, though, while we're able to meet this obligation, is that our wage settlements are set for 2010 with no clarity for 2011. While we've settled our 2010 labor contracts similar to what other counties are doing across the state, there is not a lot of clarity for where counties are going to be settling in 2011. We're still under the same restrictions of binding arbitration. I won't get into a lot of that in an open session, but one of the difficulties always is predicting what the pattern is going to be out there. And most other counties, other than La Crosse and very few in the lowest spending, counties have more levy dollars to deal with than we do. They tax at a higher amount, they have a higher tax levy, they have more flexibility than we have, and it puts a great deal of pressure on us and our, frankly, our employees to come to voluntary agreements. Except for the Hillview contract, we've had voluntary settlements as long as I've been here because our employees are willing to do their share and try to work with us, and at times I have had to accept slightly less than what other counties are doing because they recognize that commitment. That is going to get tougher and tougher as we go into the new year in 2011. We see slowing tax base growth, which may result in what is called a tax rate freeze. We just learned, I saw Bridget at one of the presentations at WCA, that Mark Harris from Winnebago County was identifying. Because La Crosse County was one of the earliest counties to establish and adopt the local option sales tax, which, for those of you that are new, it means that we added 0.5% to the state tax, means that everything that there's a sales tax on, there's an extra 0.5% that is given to La Crosse County that we apply in its entirety practically to be able to lower the property taxes, that 0.5%. Because we did that and we're one of the earliest, we ended up taking on something called a rate freeze, and I'm going to have a slide that's going to talk about this more. The earlier you adopted the sales tax, the earlier it froze your rate. And as I'll get into, we don't establish the rate, we establish the levy. It's the equalized value divided into levy that establishes the rate. There'll be a quiz on this later, but I'm going to walk through that much more slowly when I get to the later slide. The point is that we are, because equalized value is not going up, it's only going up slightly at 1% or 2%, it will push us up against that tax rate freeze probably in the next 1 or 2 years, which is going to make our jobs even more difficult. Our capital improvement needs for highway continue to expand. You've heard me talk about this many times, that if you look at the capital improvement budget at the back of the budget document and you go to the pages that have highway, you'll end up seeing page 3 of the goldenrod. You'll see a list of the 5 years projected at, if we can maintain at doing $2.1 million worth of capital each year, we are not maintaining beyond the current year with inflation. We are also not meeting that far right column here, far right, Supervisor Ebert, of unmet needs. never mind. Yes, exactly. But you notice in the far right column, those are all underfunded and unfunded projects. And what is happening is that we are being pushed to just maintain existing roads. Denny Osgood is here. We've talked about the condition of our road system. And other than just maintaining existing roads, we have well over 20 $5 million worth of unmet road needs that we have no additional way to pay for it, and just recognize that the way that we've, and I'll get back into this detail a little bit, we've been able to use reserve funds along with operating levy to be able to meet those needs, and we haven't always had unanimous agreement on the county board on how we've addressed that. At the end of 2010, we will no longer have those reserve funds. We will have to look at other funding sources. Operating levy is not one of those options. Mississippi Valley Collaboration revenue is not enough to meet Lakeview's challenges. We are going to have to revisit the rate that we charge other counties. We are going to have to revisit the rate that we charge ourselves, because remember, when we establish that rate with Mississippi Valley, we also pay out on the clients that are ours or La Crosse County. That's why we got into such a dialogue about whether or not there's a waiver from the state to actually use additional revenue from the state if they're a Western Wisconsin CARES member. Mississippi Valley has not become the entire solution to this issue, and I'm not coming up with a complete solution to this. 2010, we're fine. 2011 and beyond, I don't have an answer yet. Number eight, mental health crisis center is a major variable. Jerry and his staff and the community and members of the Health and Human Services Board and others have pulled together to try to adopt a program that will end up addressing the mental health needs and mental health crisis needs within this community. We have budgeted in the 2010 budget as if that is revenue neutral, that it will use funds that are there for placement costs and those types of care without having to increase our costs. This is a huge variable into next year. I know we'll spend time with Jerry and the Health and Human Services Board. Whether or not that's going to work into the future, whether or not we're going to have cooperation from the healthcare institutions and law enforcement is a major long-term challenge. Both it has been historically, it will be even more so as we end up addressing utilizing services to do that. I've got this far without a question. This is good. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, John.
Yes.
It's not that alone.
Right. It's not that alone. It's dealing with Chapter 51 placements, people that are at risk of hurting themselves, Chapter 55, need for commitment. There are different standards that, by law, we have to deal with the commitment to protect people.
And I'm not sure how that affects the county finances, but I thought there was only like half of the health crisis center was only really kind of half of the discussion.
Well, and that's part of what we're trying to do is to make sure that others are a partner in that, but quite often we become the paying partner while other partners leave us the responsibility. It doesn't sound like a partnership to me, but it's one of my pet peeves as a county person.
Any other questions while we're at this point?
We will spend a great deal of time on that at a future meeting as we go along, because when we get done with review of providers that have bid on that, you as a county board will be asked to actually make a bid award and end up dealing with some of that. So this, again, is just one more item. In addition to that, a further...
Ray Ebert.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, excuse me. Thank you very much. I just wondered on the highway portion of this, if I remember correctly, the state did less cutting, less this and that. We have the same amount of people, so how much of a more of our tax dollars or how much less came from the state this year than... from previous years?
There was only a slight change in highway funding. We didn't get that much less, but most of local roads are on our responsibility, and I've got a slide later that we'll end up talking a little bit more in detail about that. Should I keep going? Again, I apologize. There are a lot of details in here, but I think it's important that you try to get an overall viewpoint of this as we wrestle with the policy decisions, because they get tougher and tougher as we go through. Further cuts in human service funding will end up necessarily decreasing services. If the state needs to do a budget repair bill and or in the next biennium where they're making up the hole that they've created for themselves by using $2 billion of stimulus money to basically balance their budget, they will continue to be pressured to put more and more responsibility back on counties. They won't have any other choice. Unless the economy comes back like gangbusters that nobody is expecting, it's going to continue to push pressure on us, and that means that for the core of services that we still have left after long-term care reform, mental health, family and children, economic support, it will put more and more pressure on us and may end up resulting in not being able to investigate every accusation of child abuse, not being able to intervene in every mental health case. It's going to end up impacting our ability to provide services. And last but not least is that stimulus or ERA money will cause further reductions in 2011 and 2012 and beyond because of that impact within the state budget. The top budget issues then, and you got a separate handout on this. I don't know if it was in your budget packet, but I did distribute this. We can get more copies. And I'm going to do it in reverse order of just the other committees before I get to executive, because many of you that aren't on executive, these are all the issues that I'll get there are really overriding issues over the entire budget, and I just want to highlight some of those as we go through this, but I do want to remind you of some of the ones that will come to you as governing committee. So I just took it slightly out of order. In public works, one of the major issues, of course, will be highway capital improvement, and I will highlight that a little bit more. In solid waste tipping fees, what I'm very pleased, and we had a chance to meet with Leon, and I know Chuck Spiker was involved as the chair of Public Works, and Steve Doyle, your chair. We believe we have a way of moderating some of the impact on the municipalities. We met with the two mayors from our largest cities, and we will have a recommendation come back that will end up dealing with some of the solid waste tipping fees. We've involved the haulers, so we have a way of dealing with some of the ongoing taxes that were passed on by the state that seems to moderate the impact on our communities, and will generally have good support. So we've been able to deal with a potential controversy there. Obviously, facilities continues to be challenged. With a new facility coming online, we need to provide enough staffing to be able to provide that maintenance, but we continue to end up dealing with issues of deferred maintenance within this building. The good news, I'll just take a brief mention that Jim Spropoulos, as our facilities director, was able to bring in the fixing that's going on in the garage floor at much less than was authorized of $115,000. That ends up, we'll be bringing back a final report to you at a future meeting. The total cost will be for just the asbestos removal and the engineering identification, it'll be a little over $55,000. So again, he was projecting a much higher cost, but to be conservative, he's able to bring that under your authorization and bring you a recommendation. Health and Human Services, obviously, will deal with state cuts, mental health, justice sanctions, and an ongoing issue with home health of what the demand is for that and inadequacy of revenues there. Aging and long-term care will, of course, be asked to in the new year. We've budgeted for the Hillview Assisted Living. You will still have to make that decision in the new year and decide if you want to proceed with that, but at least it's budgeted as a placeholder. Obviously, Lakeview revenue and capital will continue to challenge us in that area. Judiciary and law, while we're over the hurdle of being able to add jail staff and to move ahead there, they've been added in this calendar year, so we're not having to add more staff next year, but we will continue to make enhancements in jail medical, mental health. We continue, as the sheriff will tell you, to have ongoing challenges in dealing with mental health services and mental health needs of clients in the jail. The attorney costs continue to be an ongoing issue, although the contracts seem to be working out with the private attorneys. And, of course, child support got a small amount of stimulus help. That's what CS means, is child support. I'm trying to fit a lot on one slide. Planning resources and development. Last year, we ended up cutting back on the amount of staffing, clerical staff supporting planning and resources. This year, we'll end up eliminating the water and stormwater position that was to be added this year because we just aren't able to continue to fund that position. Luckily, we didn't fill the position because it was supposed to start halfway through the year, but we'll continue to end up struggling meeting those mandates without the additional staffing. Finally, and last but not least, I want to highlight some of the largest impacts or the larger overall decisions that the executive committee will have to weigh in on and eventually you will weigh in as a county board. In your packet was included a green sheet called Outside Agencies. Included in that at the top are the items that were included in the county administrator's budget. If you're interested, you can also, and you might want to write this down, on page 29 are the other outside agencies that are traditionally called economic development agencies, everything from ITBEC to LADCO, DMI. Those were not itemized here separately. So if you want to look at page 29, organization 1061 are those other budgets that we've other outside agencies that we've consolidated in one budget. I see a hand over there, Mr. Chair.
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Steve. On that page, I was looking at that earlier, housing project 79062, could you give me an explanation of that?
Let me find
25,000, I believe.
Yeah, that's an item that we started budgeting last year, and with the under the direction of the La Crosse Economic Development Fund, that is to help with housing projects that come up wherever they're at within the county that the development fund feels would be helpful. In this case, for example, we use that dollar amount to do that land trust project up in Onalaska, you recall, that we helped them actually create that and worked with Cooley Cap and the city of Onalaska towards that project. If I recall correctly, it was actually voted on by the full county board as well as the Economic Development Fund. So it's a line item for a very small way the county can have a role in trying to do housing projects within the community. Mm-hmm. It's not targeted to a specific city or municipality. It's there for, as we continue to step out into trying to help out with the housing issues in La Crosse County.
And then on that same page, 29, tourism, 4,000, business industry promotion, 20,000. And I know further on in this budget, there's items listed at for LADCO and DMI and so on. So,
right, again, the business and industry promotion is a line item that's there under the direction of the Economic Development Fund, which is a board of directors that I serve on, Steve serves on, a number of other folks, and that's for projects that do. I don't remember that exact line item, that 14750, which project that was. We can get that to you. But it's for things like business promotion, brochures that do that, those kinds of things. So, again, it's under that direction of that board.
Okay. Thank you.
So again, then, and this is not your last chance to ask questions. I just want to make sure everybody knows that, particularly the new board members, but it's trying to highlight where we're at. So those are all very good questions. So this is our recommendation within the budget on how to deal with outside agencies. We'll come back through that when you actually make decisions about the budget. Also on the reverse of that page are personnel changes. I didn't put any wages and benefit numbers on here because I was just trying to get across. You will see resolutions that will provide all of that information when you're asked to vote on it. But I just wanted to quickly show you in one document, because usually it's two resolutions and usually two pages per resolution. I wanted you to zero in very quickly that there are very few additional positions, and you'll see a number of cuts that are happening within the county regarding revenue. You'll see that we're setting a challenge for printing in to try to deal with what the adequacy of their revenue sources are. You'll see in the health department, specifically in home health, trying to struggle to deal with what the revenue and demand is for their services, as well as a number of other items. So we'll walk through that very carefully when we bring those resolutions, but I can answer any questions if people have them right now.
Bridget Flood.
Thank you, Chair. Steve, I'm wondering now the proposed layoffs in clinical services, are those services that those people provide being eliminated?
I'd like to call Jerry Huber to answer this in more detail. He can give you a better background on this.
Okay. Jerry?
In the budget of about $1.3 million that we cut, we had about two positions identified in clinical that more than likely would not be in the budget for 2010. Those services we feel can be found within the community, basically outpatient therapy. So they're, in essence, we're still working with the union to take a look at soft landings mm-hmm. for them.
So this is not a sure thing yet then, or?
Well, it's in
it
the
is.
Budget,
okay,
so
yeah.
the cuts are in the budget. Basically, the question is who? is still okay. We're working with the union.
Oh, I thought they were specific positions in clinical services, and those people, if they want to stay, will have to bump into, I don't know.
The way that we presented in the budget is that we had several clinical psychologists that were in the budget, several clinical therapists. Uh-huh. What we identified is the positions, not the people. Yeah. And so, again, some of those positions are union, some of those positions are not.
Okay.
And so, again, I have a meeting with the union rep, I think, in a week to try to find soft landings.
Of course, they've asked me about it.
Sure.
So
sure. It's definitely the most complicated aspect of the 2010 budget for us.
Jerry, how much detail do you think we're going to have on that by the time we're voting on this in November?
Well, by November, I'm definitely hoping that any aspect of soft landings, any aspect of layoffs will be identified in the budget. So,
okay. Other questions?
Thank you.
Okay.
Obviously, the next bullet point then beyond personnel changes is employee compensation. I'll touch on that in the contributors to the increased levy, but we'll also be asking you to consider expanding the leave without pay or unpaid time off program, offering that to employees again for the second year. You'll hear many other counties debating issues about what are called furloughs. You'll hear the state about that. My recommendation to you has been for 2009 and for 2010 to work with employees and offer it as a voluntary concept and to try to utilize that method. If we're not able to get enough support through 2010, we may have to look at other facets of layoff or furloughs in 2011. But in the 2010 budget, I'm asking for employees to continue to work with us while we honor the labor settlements that we have, to also ask for their help in to try to deal with the budget. And for the first time ever asking that, I think we got some very positive reaction from county employees. I think we have a unique group of employees that are willing to try to help us deal with budget issues. I think we build more support and team effort by working together on this. I hope that can continue to show savings as we go into the future. I can't guarantee that will be the case in 2011, but again, we'll bring you a resolution and ask you to reauthorize that program for 2010. In addition to that, to demonstrate from the highest level of responsibility of your staff, myself and both Deputy County Administrators Gary Engelson and Jerry Huber will be specifically addressed in the budget to take additional unpaid time off. If you go to the salary item within my budget, I've specifically budgeted for 5 days off without pay, counting on that within the budget. Gary Engelson, who is getting closer to retirement, though I hope we can keep him longer, will start to work less hours, and we will budget for part of that savings. I believe Gary at 80% is still better than a new person at 100%, and that we're going to see if we can work throughout the year having him fulfill a job at 80% and figure out how we cover for each other during that period of time. We are budgeting for 10% of that savings in case it doesn't work out and we're just not getting the coverage we need, but we're counting on that savings in both the county administrator and finance budget, again, to demonstrate to our employees that we're asking to consider unpaid time off that we're doing that as well. In addition to that, Jerry Huber will be volunteering for some additional days off without pay, and what we're going to try to do between the three of us is figure out how we cover for each other, both to while we're not here and how we make those decisions when we're not here, but also to end up saving the county money through that. So I'll have a more detailed plan that I'll talk about with executive committee and eventually the full county board, but we want to demonstrate to the organization that at the highest levels of responsibility, we're expecting ourselves to do that first and to try to cover for each other, much like line employees will have to do that if they're able to volunteer for that as well. In addition to that, it's not a large item within your budget, but of course you'll have to make some decisions about county board compensation for the 2010-2012 term, so you'll get into some of those discussions. But because the election happens next April, you do have to set that next year. You'll end up spending a bit of time discussing and reviewing items like the sheet that talks about what we use for fund balances and reserves. You've also gotten a detail, and if you've misplaced this, we can get you more copies of the entire summary, that one-page summary like this, of all of your undesignated fund balances and where we're at. We have not drastically changed the amount of fund balances that we are using, but we've used it judiciously. But at some point, you're going to get lower and lower in how much is there within the policies that you have, and you're going to end up having policy discussions about what level of fund balance you should continue to maintain, what level of cuts you can sustain, how we compare to other counties of similar size. But I know at least Gary's educated me in your history. At one point back in the early 80s, you really got substantially lower than where you're at right now in fund balances, and it ended up negatively impacting your bond rating as well as your ability to operate. So we want to be very judicious and present you information that will lead to policy choices around that. You don't have to do that for 2010. We've brought you a budget that is still strong, that fund balances are still strong, but in the future, I believe you're going to be challenged in 2011 and 2012 on that. And those are significant policy issues. And finally is the overall tax levy and rate and that impact. With no further ado, then, this is the graph that we compare the historical percentage levy increase. This is not adjusted for inflation. This is not adjusted per capita. This is dollar for dollar, the percentage increase in property tax levy from 2000 to now. The past 10-year average, we've been averaging about a 7.6%, regardless of how much is supported by new construction. The past 7 years, which coincidentally are the seven budgets that I've brought you as your county administrator, have averaged about 5.7, and if you establish or adopt the budget that's before you without significant number of changes, the property tax levy would go up by 5.19%. Now, remember I said a little while ago that levy divided into equalized value equals rate. We have the responsibility together, the administrator and the county board, for establishing what the total amount of new levy spending will be. Levy spending is everything in your budget other than anything offset by other revenue sources. Okay? So when you do that, your rate is impacted depending on what happens with your equalized value. You remember this graph, and there's not going to be a quiz on this, but you notice the lower bar chart shows you the slight increases in the last 2 years. 2009 was 1% or slightly over. 2010, for taxes payable 2010, is only 2%. So if our tax levy goes up 5%, but our value of all of our homes and businesses and everything only goes up 2%, what happens to the rate? The rate has to go up. If your equalized value goes up at a faster rate during most of the time I've been here than what your levy goes up, the rate drops. Again, we don't determine the rate, the equalized value does. And many people say that, gee, well, if you just get a lot, if my value goes up on my home, the county or city gets more money. It's not that way. What happens is if everybody's value on their home goes up equally, it doesn't generate any new money, it just distributes it differently. So, for example, if the total value of the county only goes up 2%, but we need 5% more money, it means that the rate goes up. So, yes, taxes will go up more. If equalized value goes up 7, 8, 10%, and our total levy only goes up at 3 or 4%, it just lowers the rate or the amount of taxes that people pay. It never generates more money for us. New construction doesn't generate more money. We determine the rate of spending based on what we need: new health insurance, wages, new contracts, those kinds of services. So hopefully that makes some sense, but what I want to illustrate is that each of those last 2 years, 2009 and 2010, if you adopt what's proposed, our rate is going up because the value of all the tax base has gone down. Does that make sense? Pardon? We set the levy, right. And that's the third piece, exactly. And that's what we do have responsibility for. So I'm going to walk through very briefly the overall changes, because I'm going to show what contributes to the levy increase, what contributes to the gross spending changes, and to show you just how tight this budget actually is. If you go to the yellow page that's in the front of your book and you go to the bottom of that page, you'll notice a couple of things. You'll see gross expenditures, which is in the lower right box. It says gross expenditures 2009 is $128 million, 2010 is $132 million. That's an increase of 3.06%. Gross revenues, which is the total revenue column, budgeted revenues of 2009 versus budgeted revenues of 2010, Those are all revenues other than property tax levy. Remember, the levy is gross expenditures less every other revenue source. The remaining is property tax levy. And because all those revenues aren't going up to support mandated services and those types of things, it keeps pushing more and more on the property tax levy. Gross revenues are up about 1.3%, and the tax levy increase that's being recommended to you is up by 5%. I'll get into some of the detail of what that means. But because equalized value isn't going up as fast, the rate is going from 373 to 3.83, or a rise of about 2.7%, because equalized value didn't grow as fast as the levy demands have. So let's examine each one of those areas a little bit more closely. Gross expenditures were up by about 3%, but it's a little bit misleading because one of those largest items that showed the increase was budgeting for a slightly bigger assisted living facility. Remember, that's an issue that you have not agreed to yet. You still have to approve and actually fund, but in the discussions with the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, at least for budget purposes, they've talked about a slightly bigger facility. You may choose not to do it at all. You may choose to cut it back to the 24-bed facility that was there. That's an ongoing debate that you're going to have that you're not going to solve probably during this budget. You're going to solve it during 2010, whether you or not you go with it. But that was about $800,000 of that increase. So if I take that out because it's for budget purposes only, it means that your total gross expenditures only went up 2.4%. And here's where those areas are. $712,000 for debt service. That's the debt service payment that's coming online for this year. You've got one more increase to go next year for the remaining amount of debt. Remember that one of the things we did with the Law Enforcement Center debt last year was we paid off things like the highway shop, we refinanced some of the law enforcement debt, and we borrowed the money in pieces over time to postpone how much interest we have to pay and to structure our payment. Instead of just going out and borrowing $29.5 million and having that full $2 million plus payment come on all at once, we wanted to pay off some other things and ladder in the debt payments. Now, it sounds complicated, but it's the same way you would buy a number of things in your house. If you couldn't afford to buy all your appliances at the same time, you might buy one and then postpone the payment each time, because we don't have the Law Enforcement Center all up in operation in once. We don't have to pay all that in one time. We pay it over time. But part of your increase in gross expenditures is that first payment. In addition to that, then, the next largest increase that's driving the property tax levy is wage and benefits settlements. In addition to that, our in gross spending, again, gross spending is other than levy. It's everything, including outside revenue sources, including fund balance, including tax levy, is about $400,000 of one-time capital projects. Voice over internet protocol is one of those identified, and there's more detail if you want that on the blue sheet. About $490,000 in new grants and ERA funding, the Recovery Act that was adopted by Congress, and we'll talk about that in the next slide. And finally, our other operating and capital expenditure reductions, things like we dropped the property tax levy support of Lakeview by about $500,000. There were other cuts and changes that we made in total gross expenditures that I'll get into again in another slide. But you can see that the total increase in expenditures is only 2.4%. And then on the next slide, you end up seeing where some of the changes in revenues were. While revenues have gone up slightly, it again is misleading because a number of these items were tied directly to specific purposes. The biggest one is the $490,000 of grants and ERA funding. In health, for example, a good part of that is a pass-through for obesity prevention and those types of programs. Not all of that is actually money that does anything more than just pass through to other providers as well, and doesn't increase our staffing a great deal. So while we budget it on a gross basis, it's not making a huge difference to our bottom line budget. Go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
The tobacco money, as an example, and I don't want to get us off track here too much, but at some point, will we see comparison of that 365 compared to tobacco money that we know is going in the opposite direction, that we're getting less tobacco money, so that kind of wash in and wash out?
Right.
Will we be seeing that, or that's at the committee level? Or
we'll probably talk about that in detail at Health and Human Services.
Okay.
If But when Doug is actually in attendance, we can walk through each one of those pieces. It's about 333,000 is obesity. I don't have the number on the tobacco change. But if Gary writes that down, we'll get back to you with an answer.
Thank you.
Steve, I read an article recently that only about 20% of the stimulus money has actually gone out so far. Are we likely to get any of that 80% that still hasn't hit?
We are in a couple of ways. Let me describe the three ways that I know we have a good shot at. If you go out to Senator Feingold's website and look at what La Crosse County is supposedly allocated for ERA or stimulus money, you'll see three things. One is you'll see something of about $4 million, which is actually bonding authority. $1.6 million for private for public activities, so we get some discounted borrowing of $1.6 million for things like if we wanted to do a road project with it or we wanted to do a lake part of their the Lakeview capital, we get that $1.6 million. The $2.4 million, the balance of that four that I just talked about, is also a borrowing authority that's for private activity. Much like a city will do, and Audrey and Andrea will know this, they can do something called an industrial revenue bond. They use the borrowing name, if you will, of the city, in this case a county, but you don't actually incur the debt and you don't have to pay it. It allows that private activity, that private business, to use our ability to borrow, and then that 2.4 can be towards a project. So it could be towards a business that's expanding. That's $4 million of everything that I know we will get. You have to make a decision by the end of 2010 of how to allocate those two, or we lose it. The other place that I expect that during the next probably 3 to 7 months, we qualify for our energy development revenues that Nick Nichols is working on to go towards trying to supplement the solar hot water, for example, on the jail. We're looking at potentially applying for solar hot water on other projects here. We have the capability to get up to about $225,000 for those kinds of things. Other than that, I'm not seeing a great deal, particularly in highway or anything else, that we will qualify for in the stimulus dollars. So you're right. A lot of it hasn't been allocated or spent. But if you remember, that $4 million I just described is only a borrowing authority. It's not new cash. And so that there's a lot of those kinds of allocations that haven't been spent.
Now, I know in road projects, for the first round, the state basically skimmed off pretty much everything, almost everything, with the promise that we would be getting more the second round. You're saying that's not going to happen?
That's not what we're experiencing. I know Denny was here. We bored Denny. The way the state has made the requirements to be able to get it, to get the money for that project, you have to have, if you've got a project ready to go, it doesn't just have to be designed, you have to have the right-of-way already purchased. One of the projects, for example, that we'd love to be able to go after that we're not able to do, I mentioned it the other day, is OA, behind Granddad's Bluff, behind Fox Hollow. You know, it's kind of the south bypass from the south part of Eau Claire out to, La Crosse out to West Salem. Why did I say Eau Claire? From backside of La Crosse to West Salem, a lot of people do that. If you go along that road, drive slowly. It's not doing as well as... Here's Denny. He can explain this better, but that's an example where because we've got it designed preliminarily, I'm trying to explain why we're not going to get more stimulus money for road projects, and describing OA is an example where because we haven't bought all the right-of-way, but we had no funding to be able to buy the right-of-way, we're not ready to compete for that project.
Okay, the stimulus rules where you had to have a project put to call on the shelf where everything was designed, and you could have your plan specification estimates ready to go by the second go-around. They wanted it by... early part of this year, and we had no project that qualified for that. We did try to go the second round where you could have your design done by the 1st of December. Now I guess they moved that back to November, but they've had so many projects that were ready that we didn't qualify for any of them.
So the state is likely to end up with most of that again second round too?
Yeah, in essence there was no second round. There were so many projects applied for the first round, it sort of, just sort of stretched that out, but the state did get the bulk of the projects. There are
a few counties
that got some bridges, and some got a few road projects. Here in La Crosse County, the city of Onalaska got a $1.3 million project on Oak Street, and the Monaghan overhead for the DOT was funded with the ERA funds.
So there were some beneficial projects to our residents, but not to the county needs and budget on that page 3 that I've highlighted before of highway needs.
Okay. Other questions anybody have? Okay.
So
thanks, Denny.
In addition to that, thanks, Denny, the sheriff was able to get some grants that are independent of stimulus for SpeedWave and OWI enforcement. Child support will get a net of about $63,000. That's the other thing that you'll see on Feingold's website of stimulus funds. You'll actually see it says child support, $400,000 for La Crosse County. So, well, actually, it's a little less complicated than that. So, Steve, why aren't we talking about $400,000? Because the state, in their own wisdom on how they applied that $400,000, was to backfill money that the state is paying towards child support, and then they allocate it out across all the counties so that we don't get it directly. It minimizes some of what the state's paying. Did you follow that? Okay. I didn't very well. Yeah. Yeah. It's a pass. In aging, the positive thing there is that they've been able to get some additional funds that will go to actually enhance some levels of service. It's helping to provide some of the funding for positions that are included, as well as enhancements of services. Not a large amount, but it is helping. And then there was a net increase of both utility tax and state aid computer. There's actually decrease in the amount of revenue from state aid exempt computer, but an increase in utility tax because of our unique location. That has helped us in outside revenue. That's the only outside increase that we've seen at this point in non-tax levy revenue. So the actual drop after you take all those out that are one-time types of things is actually a drop of about 0.2%. Shared revenue, sales tax, interest, human services throughout the budget. So you can see how tight an increase of 2.4% is in expenditures when you don't have any other increased revenue source to pay for anything except for property tax levy. So let's examine in detail the actual property tax impact. The increase in property taxes goes from, under this proposed budget, from 28.2 to 29.7. A healthy portion of that is that debt service payment, that $712,000. Wages, again, these are gross wages other than those that are paid for by other revenue sources, because other revenue sources, like at Hillview, for example, there is no levy impact. Okay, it's all done by their revenue, Medicare, Medicaid, and private pay. In other cases, courthouse employees, for example, are almost entirely on the levy because there is no revenue that pays for that.
Steve, so I'm sorry, just Vera. To go back to that tobacco and the obesity sure. example, any positions in a place like the health department that are funded by grant dollars or through grant dollars are not going to show up in that.
Exactly.
Any other source at
right.
all. Okay.
And usually it's a combination of things.
Yeah.
So it might be part, but anything that's not here is funded by another source.
Some others.
Right.
One or multiple sources.
Right.
Okay.
Health insurance, you'll notice, is a relatively small number for two reasons. One, it only went up 1%. Number two, one of the unique things about changes that people make, we have more people choosing to either new employees being hired with only single coverage or not taking coverage than last year where you had more people taking family. So that actually has ended up reducing some of it. But not every department is like that. For example, in health, we actually had 8 more people take family policies than the year before, so their levy goes up slightly higher while some other departments were actually saving. This is countywide, because we pay a different amount depending on the type of care coverage you take. There's been an increase in Wisconsin retirement. Those of you that know or have been watching or maybe are retired yourself on the state plan know that the loss of the state portfolio has a big impact on how much retirement costs. So you see an increase there. Other fringes, which are basically Social Security and those kinds of things. You see a big decrease in Lakeview levy. We're trying to get by on less levy. We may have to revisit that before the end of the budget. I'm really struggling with that in some of the things that we've realized long term. We do end up using increased fund balance to reduce levy costs, again, mostly one-time items, and other department levy reductions. That's the total of the $1.4 million by major category.
Steve, is that WRS increase
part of that thing where the state, for the next several years, we have to kick in extra money?
That's right.
That. And how many years out is that?
I think it's five. Yeah, it's five years of increase at about 0.4 to 0.6 each year. It's 0.6 to 0.8 per year that will have to be increased. Just doesn't get us anything new. It just refunds what was lost in the state's portfolio on WRS.
Okay. Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question on that, too. I think I read in the paper a little while ago you had an article in, or it came from your office, saying that we're going to lose $203,000 or something like that, $213,000. I don't remember. I didn't cut it out. Now, to follow up on what Steve was asking you, is that the new increased rates for retirement, or is that what the state lost in the existing plans that are invested right now?
Gary might be able to explain this more clearly. That increase is primarily the increase because of the increased wages, which is already a percent of that.
Okay.
And the funding, the 200-some thousand that I referenced, was because of a 5 or 6 year plan to refund the amount that the actuaries say is needed in the Wisconsin retirement system. The Wisconsin retirement portfolio, over the difficult times we just had, and I don't know what the most recent information is, lost about 30% of their value. Okay? So given that, they had to actuarially increase the percentage that that is being paid into retirement to be able to refund that.
Well, that's where I start having a problem, because for those older people on the county board, we had to do this when Tommy Thompson was governor, too. Didn't we borrow between $2 and $3 million to make that fund whole at some point in time? And we went on the tax levy, and we had a bond for, I thought it was between $2 and $3 million. Now, how often are we going to do this?
That was something different.
No, Chuck, it was a retirement.
Well, Chuck knows plan. What it is.
No, Tommy Thompson borrowed $25 or $30 million from the Wisconsin Retirement Fund, and the state Supreme Court overruled him. He had to pay the money back, or we had to pay the money back with interest.
Okay, maybe that was, it could have been that issue, but we had a bond for it at some point in time. I remember that. But I guess, are we required as taxpayers to make up for a loss in the bad investments in the market, even though it's a depressed market, for the employees, for the state, and the
yes,
feds,
Don,
and the
they
county?
Make the rules. The answer is very simply yes.
Is,
we don't have any
yes?
choice. We don't have a choice.
We don't.
They already told us. They passed a law saying you got to do this.
But then why don't we reimburse every ordinary citizen in the state of Wisconsin? Because I can show you in a portfolio that one of my in-laws have, he lost $50,000. Shouldn't we do it for every citizen in the state if we're doing it for employees of the state and feds and county? I just don't know.
Okay. Tom Menninger.
This is having a similar debate over at City Hall, too, about positions, and they're having a similar debate over at City Hall about these positions. When people get their tax bill, though, they're only focusing on the property tax, because that's what the bill is. So this is the property tax portion of your bill here. And my question is how many of our county employees are on the property tax levy? A percentage? 50%? 30%?
Well, I've never looked at it that way. It's a $130 million budget, $132 million. About $28 million is property tax levy. So the majority of our operation through contracts and other services are not on the property tax.
So I'd be curious, though, to know roughly, and I don't need to know right now, but
we can come up with a better answer, but I'm just trying to.
We have 1,400 county employees. I'd like to kind of know how many are funded by the property tax. Is it 300, 400, 500? I know it's probably a lot less than half.
Well, and some are part.
Some are part-time.
Part-funded, state,
yes.
part
right. levy. So if you could
let us work on a better answer than just doing that off the top.
That would be helpful to know.
Because I think that's important. I mean, it's certainly important to the discussion across the street, and I'm not going to get comment on that. But I think it's important here too that you know when we say, well, you know, we got 1,400 county employees, and they say, yeah, well, you know, blah blah blah, but. They're only concerned about their property tax. They don't care if they're federally funded or paid by Hillview and all that kind of stuff. This is what they're talking about.
We'll do a better job of answering that, but we are different than a city, which generally is more property tax supported than other revenue supported. That's not a harsh judgment. It's just their revenue stream is different than ours, which, for example, none of the solid waste department employees are on the property tax levy, with the small exception of a little bit of household hazardous waste, because the user fees pay for that.
They're not on the city either, because it's a utility.
Right. Whereas the vast majority of sheriff's deputies, for example, are paid for directly by property taxes, or a police officer at the city is paid almost 100% with,
almost.
Okay, except for grants and those types of things. Let us see if we can do a better job of answering that question we just did. Yeah. By the way, though, just to come back, if you haven't heard, our estimate right now for an average home of about $150,000 in value, and some are worth more, some are worth less, we're expecting that if you adopt the proposed budget at about the 5.19% levy, it will change by each and every jurisdiction, there are a number of variables, would be about $15 a year increase. So if your home is valued a lot more, it'll be a little bit more than that. If your home is valued less than that, it'll be a little less than that. But the portion of our taxes at 5.19% illustrate or will be translated to about $15 on that mid-valued home. So again, because your constituents will ask, what is that projected? And back to I think John's point is, what's the impact to your neighbors and homeowners? Okay?
Margaret.
And that is the most we can levy, right? That's at the top of our levy limit?
Right. At a 3% levy increase and for operating, and the balance is for library and debt.
Well, in terms of that, if we decided to dump all sorts of stuff into bonding, we could go up even more.
Right, because the debt levy is not capped by the operating levy freeze.
And we're nowhere near the cap on the bonding.
Right. And we've tried to not bond any more or borrow any more than we need to. We've paid things off when we can to basically make room for the law enforcement center that this body authorized to go ahead with. Okay, which gets us to then the next point. This is one of the challenges that we continue to meet. What you'll see in this graph, and I've modified it a little bit because now it has the now that we've sold all the debt, now that we have to start laddering in the amount of increased debt, you'll see from 2009, which is the current year, you'll see a growth by about $700,000 into 2010. That's that $712,000. You'll see a growth then to 2011, which then pretty well levels off for 4 years, give or take a few hundred thousand dollars either way, which on a debt retirement schedule is not a large amount of money, as that varies to go ahead. Our biggest issue continues to be that you see those blue lines? That's the old law enforcement center, what we call the old law enforcement center that was built in 1997. If we were not still making payments on that, it would be much easier to control the overall level of debt service. If we can make it through those 3 or 4 years with a number of different ways, we'll end up saving quite a bit, because if you see the drop from 2014 to 2015, that's about $1 million drop. From 2015 to 2016, that's another $1.2 million. So one of the issues we will deal with the needs of highways, the needs of capital at Lakeview, the campus plan, all those kinds of things, is if we do choose to use more debt, one of the issues is to try to get through those difficult years where you've got such a high level of debt service.
Steve, what other debt do we have out there at this point?
At this point, I've got that schedule. I don't think we put it in the book yet because we are still revising that at this time.
Primarily the law enforcement center.
I know we had done some refinancing, but is everything else gone?
Right. The highway shop is paid off, so the four issues that make up that chart right there are the 2001A law enforcement facility, the 2008 refunding law enforcement facility, the 2009 state trust fund loan, and the 2009 bond issue. That's all law enforcement debt.
Okay. Don?
Yes, I agree with what you're saying, but on the other hand, if we create any more debt, that 2.2 is going to come up considerably, depending on what we bond for, either at Lakeview or the RFP for Human Services or...
Not Human Services. We're not looking at any debt for Human Services.
Well, no, we're going to put an RFP out for a company to do
that's
some
right,
business
but don't get,
for
don't,
us.
Don't get it mixed up with debt.
But that's going to raise our expenses.
No, our plan with Human Services is completely different from debt, so okay, let's not get the two mixed up.
Okay.
Is to use existing funds that are dealing with mental health care to pay for a new provider of services and to try to live within those line items. Don't
good
get
luck,
that mixed
good
up.
Good luck.
We need luck, but don't get it mixed up with debt.
Okay.
We would
okay,
not sell
okay,
debt
I'll take
for
that
an
off
operating
my
cost.
List then. So,
okay.
Okay. Okay.
Other questions? Okay.
So, again, one of the things that we're trying to do is get through this period of time where we're double paying because we've got the old law enforcement center and the new law enforcement center. And depending upon how you structure debt and how you deal with reserves, there are ways to make it through that if you choose to use debt for other purposes. So just take that at face value. It's those next 4 years that are the difficult part. I said earlier that we've used fund balance where we can. We've only increased the use of fund balance a little over $400,000, and we've broken that all out in a detailed sheet, but it's primarily one-time capital projects, with the exception that in Human Services we're using a little bit of their fund balance to end up dealing with some of the issues that are there. We'll walk through some of those details with the Health and Human Services Board and come back to that with the full board. But we aren't having drastic changes in how much fund balance we're using to be able to make the budget work. So let's talk about the challenge that we've got called this tax rate freeze, because that's one of the looming issues that I'm concerned about in 2011. Last couple of years, what we've been trying to do is make sure that we don't just give you a budget for this year and say everything's fine. We've been trying to do 2-, 3-, and 4-year projections to understand that what decisions we make today set the stage for what we're able to do tomorrow. This tax rate freeze is one of the more difficult challenges, that if the equalized value doesn't start to grow again or that the economy turns around, we're going to end up having a more difficult time to actually pay for the services we have. What does that mean? The tax rate is up from 3.73 to 3.83, and you can see on that yellow sheet the detail of that levy. You see operating levy of 3.17 is the rate, library is 0.22, debt is 0.44. For those of you that are keeping a scorecard, Supervisor Ebert, remember that we said we were going to keep the debt rate below 52 cents? You remember that ordinance that came up and everything else? We've been below that 52 cents every year since we established that. That could continue to grow. If equalized value doesn't happen, we'll probably be in the 52 to 55 cents next year with that last payment. If equalized value had grown, my bet would have been it was under 50 cents. Equalized value has dropped off so much. So I'm just trying to point out that as we ladder in that debt and refinance paid off the highway shop and the other things we did, we've really worked hard to control how much money we spend towards debt as well as how much of the debt rate is there. But the area of concern in 2011 is that the 1992 operating rate levy limit is 324. If we equalize value changes drastically, we can hit that 324 without an increase in spending, without an increase in levy. Mr. Chair?
Yes. Oh, Tara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You referenced last week at the regular county board meeting that there was some discussion within WCA about talking to our receptive legislators down in Madison about revisiting that 92 number. Any news in the past week or few days?
Nothing since then. We will be in touch with WCA as well as other counties that are potentially impacted earlier.
But do we have a sense that that is something WCA is willing to put on their hit parade? something to talk about, or we don't even know that yet? Because it's so new. I know you said it was really new.
It's so new. There are only 8 to 10 counties that are potentially impacted, generally ones that either don't have the sales tax, so they're impacted by that 1992 rate, or that adopted the sales tax very early, so they're impacted by a much lower rate. Mm-hmm. Our rate is one of the lowest in the state, but yet we're impacted because we adopted it early.
So that's something you'll keep us posted on as we keep coming back to this slide or some
And so that's why I want to illustrate what the impact is to us on the next slide. So if the 2011-1992 operating rate limit ends up becoming a factor, if our equalized value goes up another 2%, we'll be all right. If equalized value goes up at 2% and the county raises our operating levy by 3%, our operating rate only goes up to 320, so we're within that. But this is how close it gets. If equalized value growth does not grow at all, just 0% across the board, and the county raises its tax levy by 3% in 2011, we're at the rate limit. If equalized value drops for the first time in about 30 years, no, not a full 30 years, I think it's about 20 years. And we go up by 3%, our operating rate goes up to 338. Can't do that because it goes over the rate limit. So that means that we could not raise the levy at all if the equalized value drops by 2%. Even though we've got a lower rate than county after county after county, and we spend less levy than county after county after county, we would end up hitting that. So we are going to monitor this very close. We'll be in touch with WCA and legislators as we try to explain what this situation is. We're also updating our comparisons with other counties so that you have that information and we'll be able to share that with others. But next year, 2011, is not far away as far as what the impact will be. So some of the major policy questions that I believe, in addition to all those major issues I just talked about on that first slide that the committees will start to wrestle with, these are the ongoing policy questions I believe you're going to need to give us direction on, and we'll try to give you choices and options. Obviously, number one and always is your overall levy impact and resulting tax rate. Are there other means to reduce levy if the rate limit is imminent? Are there programs or services you don't want us to provide or you want to cut back on? We've talked about those before. There have not been any easy decisions about where to change. Lakeview is unsustainable as presently organized, and the CIP building needs are great. Mississippi Valley may not provide the total answer. I'll talk about that in one more slide. Highway funding is insufficient beyond 2010. Choices include cutting back on road projects, cutting other services to pay for highway road projects, using debt, implementing the wheel tax that only one other county in the state has imposed, but three cities have imposed, or looking for special assessment agreements with municipalities. Number four is, what is the proper use of fund balance, and to what extent can that and other reserves help us deal with budgets? Do we have too high an amount of reserve, too high a fund balance? Should we revisit that? How would we know how it compares to maintaining adequacy of fund balance? Should the existing policy be adopted or changed? And finally, and last but not least, is employee wage and benefits not settled for 2011? What is the settlement pattern? What are employees willing to do at the bargaining table, and what kind of bargaining strategy do we deal with as we go into 2011? So the two I want to examine just a little bit more closely, because I've thrown a lot of information at you in a short period of time that is more than the substance of all these line items that are here. These are the substantive issues about 2010, 2011, and beyond. Lakeview's situation continues to be a great deal of challenge. It's unsustainable as currently organized. We have ongoing state issues where the DA, Department of Health Services, has granted us a license, but we're waiting for an attorney general's opinion saying that the way we are organized with the commission ends up working. We spent a lot of time earlier talking about Western Wisconsin Cares, not able to get a state waiver for La Crosse County members. MVHS, the rates that we've charged have relied on other funds other than levy and other than Medicaid. We probably could have been at a higher rate in 2008, which would have been $44. We probably could have justified a $50 rate in 2009, the current year we're in, and up to a $67 rate in 2010. With those rate changes, are our partners still willing to stay with us? That's why we haven't pushed that rate. That's why we need to talk with them and see how essential we are to them. The CIP building needs are great. We've identified a potential of up to $9 million worth of capital needs at the Lakeview facility that aren't referenced at all in those rates. We need to be able to talk about what we can do in that area and what are the ongoing challenge of funding to meet these clients' needs. Building new would cost much more than $9 million, by the way. We've done some preliminary analysis of that. This is the history of the Lakeview tax levy. You'll notice that over the last several years, we've been using other revenues and now are in a position to start to use Mississippi Valley Health Services to help to moderate the tax levy because our county needs the relief. We can't continue to tax and serve other clients. The difficult part is as I'm reviewing next year and beyond, we've cut the property tax levy at Lakeview from $1.9 million to $1.3 million. By the end of this budget adoption, we may need to look for other solutions and revisit that number. We may have, because if we raise the rate on everybody, we also have to raise the rate on ourselves. So again, that's going to get complicated, but we'll finance staff and Lakeview and I will be revisiting this number. Okay, so that's one piece of challenging news. The next one that's looming on the horizon is highway funding. Forget the far right column of all the unfunded. Just talk about the $2.1 million. I'm almost done. I'm almost to my last couple slides if you haven't seen. Highway funding has been insufficient for quite some time, but over the last 4 years, we've been working together to provide you ways of maintaining roughly $2 million worth of capital improvements each year by using reserves and other methods. The last 4 years, including 2010, proposed. In 2007, we used short-term debt. We sold debt for less than a year. We ended up spending far less on interest than that. We only held that debt for, about 3-4 months. It cost us, Gary, what, about $40,000, I think, in interest. But it allowed us to use some room that we had in our debt rate to be able to do that road. It was controversial. This board was not unanimous on that. It ended up causing a great deal of discussion about use of debt and whether or not we should even use it for roads. The next year, we took up Supervisor Spiker's recommendation that we consider using excess sales tax and used $1,350,000 of that. Again, it was one-time money. It spent that reserve down, but it allowed us, along with operating levy, to do roads, again, at about $2 million a year. In 2009 and 2010, we gained access to another form of debt that this body had sold to end up protecting against potential long-term care of the old landfill. Because the Solid Waste Department went through and re-injured it in a new landfill, dug up all the old garbage, put it in the new lined landfill, we eliminated that liability, and we convinced the DNR that we didn't need to have that reserve that we had borrowed money for and kept there separately because we had already protected ourselves against the liability. We reburied it all. We put it in a new lined landfill. It's all protected. But the property taxpayers, not the solid waste users, the property taxpayers paid for that, so that gave us $2 million. We used $1 million for county roads in 2009. Under this recommended budget, you would use another $1 million. In 2011, we don't have any more rabbits. No more rabbits to pull out of a hat. So the choices that the county board will need to make, these are significant policy issues. Do you cut highway capital improvements below $2 million? Per year, which is just barely keeping up with inflation of the rate of building we've been doing with Denny's department for about 10 or 11 years. And we showed you that example before. Do you cut other budgets to shift funding to highway? We weren't able to agree on cuts within mandated and non-mandated services 3 years ago when we did quite an examination of what was non-mandated. Do we use highway fund balance? That could potentially be a solution for possibly 1 year. We're reexamining that. I don't have a lot of hope, but we're reexamining what is the adequacy of their fund balance. That gets you by for maybe a year, maybe a half a year. Do you redebate the concept of using debt for roads? You don't have a lot of debt margin, remember. You can't just be selling a lot, but there are ways of structuring that debt with a 4 or 5 year note. And depending on when you do it and how you structure it and other debt reserves, you might be able to really minimize the impact. Do you do the vehicle tax? Counties are debating across the state whether or not to do that. There's only one other county that does it in three cities. It's $10 per vehicle.
Isn't Eau Claire considering it?
Eau Claire's been considering it for a couple of years. In talking to my counterpart there, he's not expecting that it will pass this year either, but they're debating it. St. Croix does it. It's $10 additional a vehicle. It's one of the few revenue sources. It has to be targeted to roads. It can't be used for any other purpose, unlike the state does sometimes with money that's supposed to be categorized to that. Editorial comment. Or do we talk with the towns and areas that need the road projects and say, we just don't have enough money at the countywide level. We need your work together. How controversial would that be? So there aren't, hopefully I get gold stars for giving you a lot of options, even though there aren't a lot of good options. Toll roads. I don't know that we have the legal authority to do that. Every one of those ideas that I presented there, this body, this elected body, has the authority to do.
Jeff.
Your vehicle tax, there, is that St. Croix County that
St.
has
Croix County.
The what, wheel tax? Is that the same?
Right. They levy or they've imposed a vehicle tax of $10 a vehicle. It's done when you register your vehicle. It's added to whatever the fee is that the state has you pay, and it's added on top of that, and then the state administers it and sends a check to the county or city that ends up imposing it. Both cities and counties have this authority. There are only three cities in the state that do it. Milwaukee does it at $20 a vehicle. Mayville and what's the other city? There's a third city. It's Beloit or is it Beloit? Right. So there are three cities that have done it and one county. So
if a city does it, is the county then still able to, or are they prohibited?
Each city and county has independent authority. Eau Claire is debating it and talking about trying to do it with the city and somehow jointly agreeing to share the revenue. I wasn't real excited about that idea, but they thought it made sense up there.
Jeff.
So you said this is collected by the state, is that right?
Right?
And they won't take a piece of the pie?
They would have to change the statute to do that. They obviously could, but with four entities already doing it and it's been established. Some, by the way, I think there have been three or four cities and or counties that have instituted it, kept it for a while, decided not to do it, and didn't continue it. So it's been around since, what, the early 90s, I think? So it's an unusual authority, but it's there.
Jerry?
I was your point, Steve. Was that $20, was that Milwaukee City or Milwaukee County?
Milwaukee City.
Thank you.
There's only one county that's doing it currently, which is St. Croix County. So again, beyond 22,
Chuck.
Oh, I'm sorry.
One thing on a wheel tax, you'd have to really do a good sale because of 282 county miles highway have, which we're talking about, 90% of them are in the townships. And the cities, you'd have to do something with the cities and the villages to help them out to share that amount of money some way, because I can't see that being sold when 90% of it is in the townships, the county highways.
Well, and thank you. That's the point I've been making about all these cul-de-sacs and places that have not had adequate taxes from developers paying for the road systems that are out there. It's urban dwellers that are the ones that are paying the majority of the property taxes, and yet with all the developments that are out there, they're not paying for that $24 million worth of unmet needs, let alone just the maintenance needs that we have. And there are very few chances of how to raise money other than on the majority of property taxpayers through one method or another. The majority of vehicles are in urban areas. They're not in the rural areas.
Brad.
How much money would a vehicle tax generate?
We estimate about $950 to $1 million a year at $10 a vehicle.
All right, thanks.
I think that's the right number, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should point out, though, that the economy is loosening up a little bit because there are 10 new houses going up on the Ridgeview Heights property. There are now up to 31 instead of 21 there was a year and a half ago, and there are 97 lots totally, but the money at the banks is loosening a little bit so that people are getting money, or some of those lots are sold already, but they aren't built on because the guy's got to generate some income in his pocket before he can start buying whatever. But
you're right. I think there's some positive signs. There's positive signs in the economy, but I want to really go back to one of the points I made earlier. New building doesn't get us any new money. If we get every development out there gets 5 more houses, we get a whole bunch of new building going on, the economy comes back like gangbusters, home values go up, how much new money does that get us? Zero. No, they don't. Let me re-explain this. We determine levy. It's divided by total tax base, and that's rate. A new house doesn't generate us any new money. All it does is distribute the levy that you have across a larger number of people. If you get 5 new customers, 5 new homes, it just says everybody else's house taxes were shared with those 5 people. If those 5 people weren't there, we all pay the same tax bill. You get 5 new customers, it doesn't get the county or city any new money. We still have the same problem no matter how fast the economy comes back, unless the only thing that we get relief from is the tax rate difference. If the equalized value goes up fast enough, we can at least levy the 3%. As long as the state law is 3% operating levy cap and you don't hit the tax rate, that's the only silver lining. New building doesn't get us any new money for the government, for the county, or for the city. It helps spread out the cost of taxes, and it's more fair to people. You want new tax base, of course, because it spreads out the cost of services, but it doesn't get us new revenue. That's a common misconception for folks. Just like if the value of your house goes up, it didn't get the city or county any more money. It just meant that you paid, if your house was the only one that went up and everybody else has stayed flat, you paid more, everybody else paid slightly less. Value doesn't generate more taxes. It changes the relationship of how everybody pays taxes.
It gives you the capacity to.
Exactly. It's a good thing. Don't misunderstand. It's not that it's not a good thing. It's that it doesn't get you new money. As a board of directors just trying to stay within a 3% levy increase, new customers don't give you new money in government. It just shares the cost of government among more people. It's a common misconception.
Don?
Okay. You almost got me, but I'm not sure. Okay, but if you add $2 million to the tax base, there is $2 million more of taxable property than there was the year before.
Right.
And if we're allowed a 3% increase, that will generate more dollars because you've got $2 million more on the base.
No, because the 3%.
It does not grow the pie. It allows you to cut the pie into more pieces.
Right.
But does not grow the pie.
The 3% is on our gross spending. Okay, our levy is $28 million, right? Okay, that $28 million is as if we had 10 houses out there to tax or 15 houses to tax. That $28 million is the cost of doing what we do. If that goes up by 3%, that's now the cap. If we can't raise it 3%, we still need that $28 million. It's regardless of how many houses are out there or what the houses are worth. Because we tax based on property value, not based on per capita, not based on if there's more customers to tax. That rate changes based on what we choose to spend, and it's divided by equalized value. It's really important to understand that because there is such a misconception of folks, and you'll hear people talk about, oh, we dropped the tax rate. No, you didn't drop the tax rate. The rate dropped because equalized value went up faster than your spending. A common misconception. My last two slides, because I know that I've overstayed my welcome. Summary overview. Gross expenditures, the actual increase, as close as we can figure, with the exception of the assisted living, which you still have to make a decision on at Hillview, is a change of about 2.4%. Gross revenues, other than the ERA and grant funds, are actually down by about 0.2%. And the tax levy, the amount of taxes you need to spend to be able to maintain existing services within this budget, is up about 5%. And because equalized value has only gone up 2%, it means that your tax rate has gone up, which will be the impact of about $15 for a home of $150,000. I see
Tara.
Your hand up there.
The gross revenues does or does not include ERA? I didn't hear that. which word you said, sorry.
I took them out so
you
could
did.
See
okay,
what...
You did, okay, thank you.
Because most of them are passed, so very few actually helped us with any cost. They've been nice things to do. I'm in favor of the stimulus, but it just didn't help us with existing costs. Help the state with existing costs.
Margaret.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this on? So the tax levy is an increase of 5.19. Is that on top of another number?
Right.
And what is that number?
If you go to the yellow page, you'll see exactly where that is. You'll see right here it's 29.678. It's an increase of 5.19% over 28.23. This yellow page compares revenues and expenditures for the current budget, 2009, with the exact same numbers for 2010. So if you look at that bottom line, it says tax levy with new debt went from $28 million to $29 million. That's the 5%, or $1,465,000, which was an earlier slide. So that 5% is made up by... Linda, could you back up to the levy slide? It's a no. It's not another percent, right?
Okay.
No. Keep going. Just so you're clear, where we're spending that additional 5%. Keep going back. Yep. Sorry. No, we're not there yet. I wish this clicker would go back. One more. Yeah, keep going, sorry. You're going page up, right? Yep. Okay, one more. That's it. Okay? That slide breaks down where that $1,465,000 is spent. In summary. Which is the difference between $28 million and $29 million. Right. Significant portion of it is debt service. Most of it is wages and benefits, the changes in WRS, and the other changes we made to reduce levy to be able to make all this entire budget balance. So the final slide, and we won't have to get that back up on the screen, is just to conclude that in the month of October, we will start reviewing in detail budgets that report to individual committees and the executive committee to go over the overall issues. Obviously, we're shooting towards the public hearing November 10th and the annual meeting and budget adoption, with additional meetings as directed by the county board. The reason I want to throw that back out is I've thrown a lot of information at you that I hope is very useful in taking this thick a document into really the substance of the policy decisions that are here. Because we need to walk back through and make sure we're on the right track with you, and if we're not, that you give us different direction on these policy choices. Because it's more than just 2010, it's 2011. If we haven't made the right decisions that you want to adopt and are comfortable with in 2010, we need to make those changes and move towards 2011, because the challenges only get that much more difficult as we keep going through each year. So again, I appreciate your patience of walking through some rather complicated things, but I wanted to make sure you got this overall summary of what has changed from current year to the 2010 proposed.
Don.
I have another question. Last year you gave a sheet with all of the fee increases. You said you were coming with $150,000 worth of fee increases this year, and I didn't see anything in the packet.
We always project to try to get about $100,000 in fee increases. I'm not confident that we've gotten that everywhere. We've pushed fees about as far as we can in places, but you will get that entire schedule that you do every year. We're trying to improve the quality of that document every year. Finance Department continues to work on that, but that will be one of the documents that you'll get.
Okay.
We'll talk about.
Because I did have a problem, because the majority of those fees were from out county last year, except for a few for the sheriff and human services, but I wanted to see that at some point in time, too.
Yeah, you will still get that. We've set that expectation as part of the budget.
Be sure, if you have your calendar handy, that you mark off the evening of Monday, November 9th. Our budget public hearing usually starts at 6 o'clock, and we go for a couple hours that evening. Then Tuesday, the 10th, we will likely start at 9 o'clock, and I would say mark off the whole day just to be sure. We haven't usually taken the whole day, but just to be safe. So those 2 days, mark them on your calendar now. Chuck? Monday is the evening, 6 p.m. Tuesday, 9 a.m. Chuck?
Two questions. Number one, on the furlough of the $90,000 that we saved, where does that money end up in after we save that amount? And why I ask you that question is because you really levied for that amount. So you didn't save the taxpayers anything. You just put the $90,000. I guess the question, where is that $90,000 going? Well, how is that going to be spent, if it's going to be
spent? Well, first
of
all, the $90,000 is an estimate of what people have mm-hmm. agreed to take off in time. If they do between now and the end of the year, mm-hmm. I've taken 1 day. I've agreed mm-hmm. to take 3 days. As long as I take the other 2 days, it will end up staying in the general fund.
But you would agree with me that the money was levied to the taxpayer and paid it.
Right, but if we're using fund balance to help us through budget items, it ends up replenishing the fund balance. In particular, let me use the example, particularly on point in human services. If you pull out the blue sheet, you'll end up seeing that one of the new things that we've done to try to get through human services is what's called salary and fringe savings matrix and unpaid time off. Every year, we end up having attrition within human services of about $200,000. Any amount of leave without pay or unpaid time off in that department will accrue to that fund to help hit that number of savings. So in 2010, we're not going to levy. We're going to count on $200,000 of savings, so it will help meet that number. So when Jerry says, I agree to take some of my time off without pay, it will help hit that number, just like if he keeps that matrix going that a position is vacant for 12 weeks as they're trying to get working around keeping that position vacant, that will help hit that $200,000. So it will benefit that and will not levy for it because that's what we're counting on.
That's the question I have. You will not levy for it.
Right.
The second question is, I've been reading about different cities in the state of Wisconsin offering in their labor negotiations a freeze on salaries for 2 years for a guaranteed job for 2 years. Does that ever come up on you?
There's one county that I'm aware that's done that, Racine County. It's not clear yet that they've gotten agreement with everybody, but they have used the, quotes, threat of layoffs to try to get different settlements.
Well, isn't Milwaukee County talking about that too?
I don't follow.
Or maybe it's Milwaukee City.
I don't follow Milwaukee very well. I follow communities that are closer to us in size.
Jeff.
Thank you, Steve. What do you think it would help if you gave us a sheet of paper that explained everything that is figured into equalized evaluations? How you get there to the equalized evaluations for the county?
Well, what might help would be to take the $7.7 billion, which is the total value of this county, and break it down by residential, commercial, ag land, give you an idea. About 70% of our value is homes. And we all know what's happening to home values, but what's on the horizon is what's happening to commercial values. Commercial values are doing worse in some cases than housing values. We haven't seen the drastic fluctuation like the East and West Coast, but would that be helpful if I broke that down?
No, I think it's, I can see where people are confused, where the costs of homes are going up, and then you're saying the equalized value hasn't gone up.
I think the question is, how does equalized value get determined?
Oh, equalized value is determined by the assessors.
Right.
Okay, so each assessor decides that all the homes are worth X. They put a value on it. All the businesses are worth Y. All the farms are worth Z. And you add all that up, and that's your total equalized value. They do a formula between towns, between municipalities, and that's the total value of this county is $7.7 billion, and that's what the $28 million we levy gets divided by. And that's what determines the rate.
Dan.
Two short things. Did you hear what the state is going to do with the people that are going to be taking time off, and where are they going to put that money? Because the state determined three paid, not exactly holidays, but October 12th is one of the days they're going to take mandatory take off in next month, in October. And there will be no work done at all in those 3 days, and I don't know what the other two are. But how is the state going to balance their budget with the money that they're saving, or what are they going to do with the money? You know, because it affects us indirectly because we got university extension. We pay 40, 60.
No, it doesn't affect us. The one thing is they won't give it to us.
Well, I knew that.
So aside from that, it's not going to help our budget.
But the university, when they had their convention in La Crosse, were trying to come up with this formula of savings because it's a 40-60 split with extension. And I was wondering, I don't know if they ever came up with any conclusions on that either.
With extension staff specifically, we haven't figured out how to address that. Yes, they're having to take furloughs, but whether or not it actually saves us any money on the portion that's paid for by the county, I'm not positive that it will. What the state did in mandating furloughs is, and it's more complicated than this, but it's as if they had a line item of savings that they're counting on, just like we do in our salary and fringe matrix, leaving positions open, people taking leave without pay or unpaid time off. In human services, we're actually counting on that. But on a much larger scale, that's what the state did. The difference is that many of their classifications, you don't just close down for an hour. You still have to teach the same number of classes. You still have to so they whether or not they actually save what they projected, I don't know. That's why I prefer our concept of unpaid time off and the position attrition and seeing if we hit a number, because then we've got voluntary agreement than otherwise.
Tara, did you have your hand up? Oh, Bill?
He knows a lot about this.
I have to chime in just a little bit there on that. First of all, one thing, for instance, Department of Workforce Development funds employees, including the Unemployment Division and some of the other divisions, are completely federally funded. So actually the state didn't save a dime on those. And actually that money's going back to the feds. I hear Mississippi got some of it. Michigan got some of it. Unemployment claims are put, so they draw your own conclusion about federally funded employees and what good that did to, kind of like what good is may it or may it not do for the UW Extension folks. The other problem is with the 24-hour places like the prisons, the people who are furloughed are actually back-funded with people on overtime, so they're losing money there. So the only potential savings are places that are state-funded that run kind of a 9-to-5 operation. So there's some savings there. Whether you can probably tell personally, I'm not convinced that the savings there makes up for the backfill overtime and the loss in federal dollars. But maybe there's some savings realized when, like, DMV closes down for a day and no one can get their license plates renewed that day, because that's largely state-funded, regular. Bankers hours, if you will, operation that's funded with GPR. No, I'm federally funded, actually, so for whatever that's worth.
Ralph.
Move to adjourn.
I want to make one announcement.
Wait, one announcement by Don Meyer?
Yeah. For those of you that are here on for the zoning committee, there'll be no zoning tour on this Wednesday. There's only three places, and we're decided not to go there. Thank you.
Okay, no zoning tour. So, motion by Ralph Geary to adjourn, second by Tina Weirs. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.